From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 125 of Little Brother for the 1st of April, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to use them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. We've got a lot of headlines this week, so buckle up. Let's get started. WeVibe is a Canadian manufacturer of remote-controlled sex toys. Why am I talking about teledildonics, you might ask? Well, it's for the same reason that so many things get discussed on this show. Poor security. The toys in question connect to a smartphone via Bluetooth for a partner to operate the device from wherever they may be. However, as you may well expect, any data produced from such a device is intensely personal and sensitive. After a court case in Illinois, the sex toy maker have been ordered to pay customers up to $10,000 Canadian apiece, that's approximately $7,400 US, after selling them devices that tracked users without proper notice or opportunity to opt out. From one extreme to the other now, there is a picture making the rounds on the internet showing Pope Francis wearing a white puffer jacket, but otherwise decked out in his usual recognizable form. To the casual observance of a non-Catholic, there's nothing really suspicious about this. After all, it's winter or has been recently in the Northern Hemisphere and the man needs to be warm. Look closely though, you'll see a few things that are amiss. Notably, his right hand looks all wrong, but you gotta be looking at his hands to spot it. As it turns out, the photo is a fake, one that easily passes for real. It was produced by the Midjourney AI, further raising existing concerns that photographic fakery in the short-term future is going to be nearly impossible to detect. Speaking of AI, a gathering of about 1,100 tech leaders headlined by Elon Musk, Steve Wozniak, and Andrew Yang have signed onto an open letter asking that the rapid recent development of AI be put on a six-month hiatus. The concern of the group is that AI development needs to be bounded by ethical limits. The letter urges that the development of powerful AI systems should only resume once we are confident that the results of the development will be positive and that their risks will be manageable. They've urged that if the industry will not participate in a verifiable pause, that the government should step in and take action. Responding to privacy concerns about ChatGPT, Italy has banned its use. The Italian government has concerns that the tool's training may have consumed the personal information of individual users of the internet. OpenAI, the proprietor of ChatGPT, have stated that they've undertaken efforts during training to prevent the chatbot from collecting such deeply personal information. I've spoken many times about commercial spyware such as the NSO Group's Pegasus. NSO allegedly only markets their product to governments, and it seems as though the market is booming. On Monday, the administration announced that at least 50 government personnel of the U.S. government had been hacked using this class of products while stationed in 10 different countries. In response, the president has signed an executive order barring the use or future purchase of commercial spyware products by U.S. government agencies. Similar tools built by U.S. intelligence services, however, are still permitted. Printed circuit boards are a critical component of nearly all electronic devices of the last half century or so. In an effort to ease supply chain problems, the Biden administration has invoked the Defense Production Act to release funds totaling $50 million to be spent on circuit board production in the U.S. and Canada. The move is expected to streamline the procurement process in order to bolster the U.S. electronics manufacturing industry. An anonymous Russian whistleblower has leaked files from the Russian cyber war efforts. The files appear to have come from a contractor called NTC Vulcan, which is reputed to have multiple Russian government contracts. The files reveal the contractor and their associates to have been behind multiple power blackouts in Ukraine, interference with the Winter Olympics in South Korea a few years ago, and with NotPetya, the most economically destructive malware in history. With any luck, the whistleblower will remain anonymous so as not to fall out of a window onto Novichok-coated polonium bullets. Back in November of last year, in episode 109, I made mention that the city of San Francisco wanted to arm their police robots, following the lead of the city of Oakland. People are understandably horrified by the idea. From there, it really only had to be a matter of time before an armed robot would kill a suspect. I am sad to report that that time is now. Police in the city of Dallas were involved in an armed standoff. When negotiations broke down and the suspect and police exchanged gunfire, the police department responded by using their bomb robot, not to defuse a bomb, but to deliver one. This is believed to be the first time that a person has ever been deliberately killed by a police robot. The Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, has proposed a new rule dubbed Click to Cancel. The rule is designed to address the problem of online services, especially video streaming services, where it can be very easy to sign up but exceptionally difficult to unsubscribe. The proposed rule would require companies to make it as easy to unsubscribe as it was to sign up. The rule passed the commission by a 3-1 vote. Did not, however, find any information on when the rule might take effect. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. Although Elon Musk has promised that he would open source some of Twitter's inner workings, the planned date for that being actually this past Friday, prior to that point, the code is proprietary and confidential, whether you like it or not. That, however, did not stop it from making its way onto GitHub. A user using the handle of Free Speech Enthusiast, possibly intended as a poke in the eye to Twitter's owner, shared the source code to Twitter's recommendation engine on GitHub. Twitter naturally has sent a DMCA takedown notice to GitHub, with which they have complied. They've also been subpoenaed to produce whatever information they have on who Free Speech Enthusiast might be, and they have until this coming Monday to comply with that. Thank you. The other one we have this week is everybody's favorite chatbot, ChatGPT. OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, have stated that a bug in the system allowed active users during a specific time frame to observe other users' chat history. They estimate that payment information for 1.2% of their users who were active at the particular time may also have been compromised. They have patched their systems. There has been a lot of talk about banning TikTok. The Senate, it seems, has been hard at work trying to figure out a way to do that. But there are a couple of things that complicate this for them. At the root of it, you can't simply write a law that says TikTok is banned for a couple of reasons. First, a law that's written like that is very easily bypassed by the target company. All they got to do is change their name. All right, fine, TikTok is banned. We are now TikTok. The second problem is a problem with the constitutionality of such a bill. Let me explain. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution reads, quote, "No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed," end quote. That's the entire clause, by the way. A bill of attainder is a law passed by the legislature that directly targets a person. And since it's already settled U.S. law, again, whether you like it or not, that corporations are people, they too cannot be targeted by such a law. So, that leaves them creating laws that rather than saying so-and-so is to be blocked, banned, punished, or whatever, the law carefully describes the targeted person or organization and states that it applies to organizations or persons that fit that description. However, law is a very technical thing. And technicalities and loopholes, those are a thing. If a law lands on the books, there's always the possibility that the law can be used in ways that it wasn't intended. For a very recent example, simply look at the state of Wyoming. A couple of years back, they had a constitutional amendment that was designed to mitigate a perceived threat from the Affordable Care Act. And just a month ago or so, or not even that long ago, it ended up instead overturning an abortion ban. So, I told you all of that to introduce you to a bill that is in a Senate committee that is called, hang on, let me get this right, the Restricting the Emergence of Security Threats That Risk Information and Communications Technology Act. Why is it called that? Well, it's because they wanted it to spell out the word restrict. Why did you think they called it that? This is Congress, after all. So, the Restrict Act is Senate Bill 686, currently, as I said, in committee. It is backed by 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats, and I'm very sorry to say that my own state's Kirsten Gillibrand is amongst the backers, though that is a sizable chunk of the Senate, so there was a fair chance of it, about 50-50. This bill is dangerous, and it must die. It must die now. It must not come to the greater Senate. It must not be replicated in the House. It must not reach the president's desk. And if it does any of those things, it must be voted down or vetoed. It needs to die. Why? Well, in a nutshell, this bill gives the executive branch too much power. Now, if you like Joe Biden, or even if you just find him tolerable, I want you to keep something very important in mind. This is very, very important. It is that he will be replaced at some point in the next 6 years, ushering in a new slate of executives, and you might feel differently about them. So, the Restrict Act makes reference to foreign adversaries. That's actually a technical term defined in the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 15, Section 7.4, and it lists six nations specifically: China, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Russia, Venezuela. No surprises there. Now, that section of law says that the president can modify this list by executive order. And I get that. It needs to be changeable at a tactical pace rather than a strategic one. So that, at least, I will grudgingly let go. Besides which, that's not what's new. That's existing law. But the problem is what happens when you put it together with the rest of the Restrict Act. The act gives the executive, specifically in the form of a new secretarial position, the ability to pass judgment on whether or not something communicated electronically qualifies as coercive or criminal behavior on the part of a foreign adversary. That is a big enough opening to sail a barge through. And coercion? Well, that's just what social media platforms do. So, there's been a saying on the internet for decades that the net senses censorship as damage and routes around it. And this is partially literal, it's partially metaphorical, and it's mostly true. For the literal parts, the internet can find alternate routes for traffic. But that's not really going to help you here. This needs to go to the metaphorical part. The metaphorical part is that if something on the internet is blocked, the users are clever enough to find other sources for it. For instance, if someone in the US wanted to watch British television as seen in the UK, a virtual private network or VPN with its exit point located in the UK would get you that, even if, say, the BBC or ITV decided that their content should not be streamable outside of the country. However, it seems like Congress thought of that. Not only had they thought about it, but they've attached some significant penalties to bypassing the restrictions of the Restrict Act. Taking any action to bypass the blockade comes with fines up to $1 million and jail time of up to 20 years. Let that sink in for a minute. This is censorship, plain and simple, with the potential to change at the arbitrary will of the executive branch, and it carries a penalty of up to $1 million in 20 years. Free country, my ass. They could have done this with much fewer negative ramifications if instead they'd just gone and persuaded tech giants. And they only need to do two of them. Just persuade tech giants Apple and Google to just remove TikTok from the app stores. Much the same way that they removed Parler. Having a grievance over it would still be valid, of course. But the danger posed by this bill would not be there. Now, some of you are no doubt going to blame the party in the White House. Don't. As I mentioned before, 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats are backing it. Now, I'm no fan of TikTok for numerous good reasons, but I can't get away from the simple fact that this bill is un-American any way you care to look at it. It must die. The world is a very dangerous place, so this week I bring you two OPSEC items that you should be aware of. Malware comes in a number of forms. Worms and Vira are the best known, but Trojans are far simpler, far more common, and far easier to defend against. Trojans get their name from the Trojan horse of Greek legend, where a giant wooden horse was delivered by the Greeks to the Trojans just outside the city walls and presented as a gift. The Greeks and the Trojans were at war at the time, so who knows, maybe the Trojans saw it as a peace offering? I don't know. Regardless, they accepted the gift and rolled it through the city gates. And once inside, the Trojans discovered, too late, that the horse was hollow and had a team of Greek soldiers were holed up inside, thus leading to a breach of the city walls. In a similar fashion, a Trojan gets past your defenses by appearing to be something valuable or useful or novel. Maybe a gift, maybe a lost and found item, whatever. You get the idea. So let's talk about two Trojan horses. The first one is a client for a botnet called Nexus, and it appears to be currently in beta. The client itself is not new, it's called Sova, and it attacks banking, commerce, and other money handling applications. I wasn't able to find any trustworthy information on how the client gets dropped onto a device, so the OPSEC advice I would offer you here is not to use your Android phone to handle money if you can avoid it, just as a precaution. However, the second Trojan is far more physical and, to use the military euphemism, kinetic. No doubt your employer's IT department has talked themselves blue in the face about not picking up stray USB devices and plugging them into your computer. Up to now, the consequences have mostly been things that will make a bad day for the IT department, as you may have invited an infection into your computer. Seems rather a lot like inviting a vampire into your house. Or maybe you've attached a device that gives an attacker access to the machine via the network or something wireless. Or in the worst case up to this point, maybe you've plugged in a USB killer, which has no real smarts to it, just a charge pump that builds up a high voltage by drawing power from the computer, storing it in a capacitor, which it then unleashes on your hardware, causing damage to your machine, physical damage. Well, the stakes just got a lot higher. On Tuesday, five Ecuadorian journalists received USB devices in the mail. One of them, Lenin Artieda of TV station Ecovista, was unlucky enough to plug his in first. It was a bomb. Milton Perez of Teleamazonas barely missed meeting the same fate. Apparently, when he plugged his in, it didn't connect correctly. Ecuadorian police were able to intercept the remaining devices and carry out some controlled detonations. Thankfully, Artieda suffered only minor injuries. But I want you to think about that the next time you see a stray USB device and think about plugging it in. As usual, we'll end this week's show with a fail of the week. How about one that's genuinely not a big deal? This week's fail goes to Starbucks. The Seattle-based coffee giant has, go figure, an app. The app, again go figure, has the ability to communicate things. In this case, the app communicated, and I quote, "Hello, test one from Sean K." That's it. From the available information, it appears as though the notification only appeared on iOS devices, so iPhones, iPads, etc., and that Android users of the app have been spared. Again, not that it's a big deal. Starbucks have stated that this was not the result of a systems or data breach, and that customer data remains safe, assuming that it ever was safe in the first place. Pure speculation on my part, but I assume that Sean K is a now very embarrassed developer who inadvertently sent a notification to production rather than to dev or QA. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Knight Rider 007, Joe Cadillac, Annabelle, Misdemeanor, David, Freescholar Family Tree, Azriel, Fongaboo, Thriller at Play, Ed, and two anonymous contributors who may or may not also be anomalous for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Punk music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.